Edition. Demolishing the Edition War, role-playing in D&D 4E. Alright, so, as I said before, this is typically a controversial subject. I love arguing with people, as one of my best buddies can
attend to. You always like to be right, too.
I always like to be right.
Usually isn't, though.
And usually I'm not. This came about because the culture in Dungeons & Dragons role-playing... Okay, first off, Dungeons & Dragons... as you guys are well aware, whether you like it or not, is the top role-playing game as far as gross sales, product support. There's no denying that Wizards of the Coast is the leader in tabletop role-playing. You can like the system, you can hate the system, the numbers don't lie. And when 4th edition came around, there was a massive upheaval of... Even myself, when I was told, before it was even announced, that 4th edition was coming out, I was like, whoa, 4th edition? Didn't 3.5 just come out? And I was kind of in the boat that I was like, well, damn, I'm looking at my library at home, and I've got, you know, 45 books from various companies, including Wizards of the Coast. I'm like, what the hell is going to happen to all this? But so I think the roots of it come from the fact that people invested so much into the game, and now this new system's coming out. So I think what happened is people looked for the easiest way to attack that system. And when you look at it, with the way that at-wills are set up in counters and dailies, it was very easy for people to say, this is an MMO. I'm not playing World of Warcraft. So aside from the ignorance of those kinds of comments...
However truthful,
to an extent...
But everybody likes, I mean, I don't like MMOs, but I like 4th edition.
Right.
I think it cleaned it up.
Right.
But I still, you know, think...
And I'm not naive, yeah, I'm not naive enough to think that they didn't take something that's got millions and millions of customers, what World of Warcraft, and at least pull some of those elements to draw people in. But anyways, let's start out. My name's Matt James. I'm a freelance writer and game designer for Wizards of the Coast. I also write for Open Design, Cobalt Quarterly. I run the website loremaster.org, and hopefully my street cred will lend some weight to the conversation.
How'd you get into that?
A lot of ass kissing.
And he has a brother who's...
See, this is what everyone said. My older brother, Brian R. James, writes for Wizards of the Coast as well. He got his own Grand History of the Realms, if you're a Forgotten Realms fan. So he did a lot of fan fiction online. That's how he got in. I submitted 54 queries, that's what they call it in the writing world, for articles and things like that. Never got any of them. And luckily one day my brother was like, well, I need help on one of these adventures. And luckily Chris Youngs recognized my name as the annoying guy who kept submitting queries. And that's kind of how I got my foot in. How we met was through a live-action role-playing.
Shh.
Oh, sorry. Any LARPers? Yeah.
Dagger.
Oh, Dagger here. Avalon. Yeah. And my brother-in-law owns Avalon. So that's how I got my start. And we were teenagers, and we got aside from being geeky kids. But anyways, so that's how I brought Dave in. Dave, you want to introduce yourself, and then we'll let the other Dave.
I'll let Dave go first.
All right, Dave.
All right. So I'm Dave Chalker. I run CriticalHits.com. I am a founder of the RPG Bloggers Network. My work will appear in an upcoming, now unannounced, Wizards of the Coast product, written for a bunch of stuff online, general just RPG blogger guy.
And my name's also, you know me, David, since he's Dave. And
Dave is on my business card, so you can't take it.
I'll be Dave then. So, I don't know, I've been playing games since I was like 14 when my mom introduced
me. Tell him how you were conceived. Did you bring it?
I didn't.
Tell the story real quick.
I have a 20-sided die. It's a pink 20-sided die. And I don't know if any of you have seen really old 20-sided dice, but they don't have 11 through 20, on, or 10 through 20 on them. Instead, they have 1 through 0, or 1 through 0 in one color, and then 1 through 0 in another color.
And that represents teens and...
Yeah, and you choose which one is the high and which one is the low. Well, my parents met playing Dungeons & Dragons in, like, I guess the 70s.
Yep.
And this is the die, I wish I had brought it, that... my parents used when they were playing. It's this pink die with the yellow and black single digits on it, and the the sides are all so worn down, it just rolls and rolls.
Forever. It's annoying to play.
That is my lucky
guy.
Die right there. When everything goes not my way, bam. So I don't have the street cred.
Oh, you do.
Or the
he's also one of the co-authors of the convention special, Palace of the Frozen Skull.
And I think there's still some spots open for tomorrow if any of you're interested.
Yep. It's fun. He will be contributing more to loremaster.org. He's going to get into game design. He just doesn't know it yet.
All right. But I guess mine is a hereditary legacy. That's my end.
He's a prodigy child. All right, so Dave, we'll start out talking about demolishing the Edition Wars.
Well, see, the thing is that I'm not as interested in fighting Edition Wars, especially nowadays.
Fight.
But see, the second part of the whole thing is role playing in fourth edition. So well, I think we both agree. Love second edition. I played pretty much the beginning. Until third edition came out.
Love third edition. Love 3.5. I have no qualms with any of the time spent.
Yeah. What I do have a problem with is people are they took out all the stuff. You can't roleplay in fourth edition, which is total crap. I've been running it since the game came out with my campaign from first to 15th level now. And, there's all the same stuff out of D&D. I play con games all the time. One-shots for events and that kind of thing. And there's really... there's no truth to it, but I know some of the common complaints, and I thought we'd probably address some of those.
Right, and I think some of them are founded to an extent. I just think people, and hopefully we on the panel can help broaden that horizon to show you how, if you take an element, say you want something from second or third, and how that's easily portable to fourth edition, because fourth edition is so broken down, quote-unquote, easy to pick up, it makes it easier for a DM or storyteller, game master, whatever you want to call them, to kind of build up that story. And Dave's pretty good at doing that, too. So
one of my top tips, I would say, so you hear these people and they say, there's no role-playing in 4th edition because, they do all these spells that do interesting things, which is actually pretty, I miss a lot of those, really funky little spell-type things. But it has this interesting implication that, you can't roleplay if you're not a spellcaster. I mean, when has that ever been true? Fighters still fight, and rogues still do pretty much all the same stuff.
Rouges.
So, what's that?
I was saying rouges.
Rouges.
We call them rouges.
I see. And so we know that's not true. It's just you gotta kind of think laterally. So the thing with them is. They have their combat abilities, and then you have this list of skills. Now, one of the big differences, in pre-4th edition wizards, you had, your spell slots, and they memorized spells, and, wizards were in this box of, the only spells wizards can cast are those that are in spellbook. It's a very, tightly grained sort of thing. Wizards are only magical X times per day. But in 4th edition, you got to look at wizards in all the classes as these guys can do this stuff more than that. So one of the things I like to encourage in my campaign is not just using rituals and stuff for some of these more utility effects, but allowing the arcana skill to pretty much do anything related to arcane magic, right? So you don't need a spell that's draw energy from the mystic totem and throw it at the bad guy or whatever, or to determine the nature of the odd spell that's going on. You don't need a spell for that. An arcana skill check can easily substitute for that. You guys have any examples?
Bringing up the wizards and the whole spell slot issue where people kind of... And I kind of miss... Because I played clerics and wizards in 3rd edition and 2nd edition. I do kind of miss, at the beginning of the day, you go through your first level through 5th level spell slots and you kind of fill in the thing.
While everybody else waits 5 hours.
Exactly. He was my DM.
I hate 3.5 and 3rd. I'm just going to go ahead and say
there's nothing wrong.
4th edition has fixed a lot of the problems that I didn't like. And a lot of things I didn't like about 3rd was that. And was the bloating of all the books and how the more books you had made you more and more powerful.
And with the if you want to kind of get back that feeling where you want the spell, selection at the beginning of the day, if that's what your group, your DM, and your party is amenable to, is... Just go through first level spell. Instead of picking a spell at every level, and that's kind of what you're locked into, allow the wizard at the beginning of the day to pick any of the first level at wills. Two of them. That's first level encounters. Just let them pick one. You know what I mean? So that gives them the kind of, they can mold their spells for that day if you want that feeling again. So in a way, if you do it that way, it's no different than the, you know, third edition. But I agree, and kind of with the edition wars in the continuity of the game, he ran like a campaign for some of our close friends, and we consider ourselves, we purposely, because I'm a game designer, I go out of my way to break things on purpose, because it's better for the game if I can go back and say, whoa, dude, whoa. So he ran, he's like, any book you guys want, every splat book is available, do your worst. It got to a point, you remember that?
It was terrible.
We went through, and there was about six or seven Monster Manuals at the time. He got so frustrated with us that he's like, okay, guys, we've proven the point, okay. And what it came down to is we were 10th level in 3.5. We found the nastiest creature we could find that has the highest CR and everything, if you guys remember about CRs. And I think it was some dragon that had like 100 arms with 100 Vorpal Greatswords.
Let me do it.
Okay.
That was supposed to be like the climax of a campaign that's supposed to be epic and super difficult. Like, somebody's probably going to die. He was a cleric. He even got stripped of his cleric power, so all he had was his weapons. So I was just, like, severely hampering them. I put them up against the Greater Demon Demogorgon, and they killed it in two turns. First turn, it stunned them all, and the second turn, it died.
No, it was two ticks, and ticks are players' turns within a round. So player one goes, player two goes, dead.
And at that point,
and that's when he quit.
The books.
And then that's when we grabbed the Monster Manual, and we found the highest CR ever with the it had 100 arms with 100 great Vorpal Greatswords. Yeah, and we beat that. It took us four ticks, but it was. And what that did is it proved that one as a DM, even in fourth edition, you have to discriminate against what you allow your players to do. And there's a massive difference between living campaign, like Living Forgotten Realms, which a lot of people associate with 4th edition. It's just one campaign. And what you do in your home campaign. Like, Dave has a lot of great suggestions, and if you guys follow Sly Flourish, I know he's here. He's got some great tips for D&D 4th edition. But, yeah, so 4th edition took away all of the small... And everybody here knows the one guy. You might even be sitting in here. That knows every silly, stupid, obscure rule. And not only do you know it, you know exactly what page and paragraph it's on, so that when your DM makes a decision, you're like, well, actually, right here says I can do it. And yeah, and then you put the... Yeah, there's one.
Our guy is that moved to Texas.
Yeah. Good, I'm staying in Texas. But no, I mean, and it sucks, because it kind of puts... Yeah, at the end of the day, the DM's the arbiter of rules and everything else, but you still make the guy look like a jerk when you're like, no. Well, I guess if we're not going to be playing by the rules, that's cool. And it's like, okay, come on. We all know a guy like that.
There are different levels of that.
There are different levels. I'm obviously being humorous with this, but we actually have a friend who's just Tiki and John
and like
Roy.
Four or five.
Hey, oh, God, we do have like five of them.
I've got at least two, but one of them's kind of funny that, like, he didn't do it with rules. It was like the DMG specifically has some stuff that's on the player's handbook and whatnot, story-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, part of the reveal of my campaign, I knew that, like, none of my players had read the DMG, and so I could actually use that stuff as secrets. But, like, he DMs his own game, so it's understandable.
Right.
But, like, you know, the players were talking about this god, and then he was just like, oh, isn't that god, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, well, would your character know that?
Yeah, well, it said that he was able to rationalize it in character pretty well, too. So I was like,
that's what sucks is when they can rationalize. It's like, you wouldn't know. That's like, well, actually, if my character did
my
A, B, and C, and
A4.
You did approve this background, which means that I've got access to this, and I'm just, hey, I'm just saying, would you want me to roll, or... And that, it's funny how those arguments end. Yeah, they're like, if they can't, they don't have a good argument at the DM, they're like, I'll just roll.
And that's a rule that I'll steal from White Wolf Games from now until eternity. The golden rule. It says it in the book, I don't care. It's my game, if you want to play, you play.
Tell them
rules.
What it's really called. Amongst our friends, the golden phallus, the rule of the golden phallus. The DM has a golden phallus. Therefore, if you don't have a golden phallus, your phallus is not as cool as the DM. The DM's always right. And there's
some
stories that aren't appropriate to talk about.
You also have to be careful not to overstretch your, like, power, though. Because you don't want to be like, my rule is the highway.
Right.
And if you, you know, push it too much, then it's not fun for them. You want it to be fun for everyone.
And they'll retreat, and they'll, you know, everyone, well, especially now, they'll, you know, the guy who sits back with his phone while everyone's role-playing, and they're like, okay, Yeah, I'm going to do an athletics check. Do I make it? Okay, I'll attack. You want to draw people in. And I think 4th edition's good at that because instead of constantly... I should have brought it. I have a composition book of my cleric from his campaign. It's a composition book filled with crap. And not very much of it's plot from his story. It's because I had to maintain so much stuff being a higher level cleric. That instead of in 3.5, I'm sorry. Instead of paying attention to the story, I was constantly looking like this. Whereas now, I mean, it's really easy. Yeah, well, combat breaks out. Okay, well, I'll do this. So that's one of my arguments. 4th edition can do everything that 2nd edition did, that 3rd edition did, 3.0, 3.5. It's just a matter of seeing it that way. And I can understand how people get into the combat tactical system of 4th edition.
And if that's what you want out of it.
If that's what you want out of it, then great. Play a tactical mini war game. But you can also, you can do everything you can do before.
That's what bugs me the most when people are like, well, it attracts all the munchkins. I'm like, first of all, why is that bad? Like, if everyone in the game wants to, like, power game and just kill stuff, like, you know, why say you're doing it wrong and, you know, you should be having this different kind of fun? Second of all, like, I have some really heavy-duty power gamers in my group, and we always have been, but they also come up with elaborate backstories. Mm-hmm. They participate in all the story stuff, you know? Like, that's... I don't see why the fact that they're good at designing characters and... you know, really good at killing my monsters quicker than I want, that they should, you know, somehow be less of role players, you know?
Right, yeah, and combat's just one aspect of the game. It just so happens, I think we talked about this, 4th edition, it's just really fun, the combat, and I think that's why a lot of people just associate it with the combat side.
Yeah, you almost don't want to role play because you're like, when are we going to fight again? It's
right.
So
you can create, you can take what you love about the previous editions and bring those in. And I've seen DMs that have made very engaging, quote-unquote, skill challenges, which most people, some people groan at, but if the DM really understands how to engage the players with their skill challenge and make it not necessarily feel like a skill challenge, you can have these great role-playing experiences, even combat that's not even done on the map, which Dave's done a couple times, and it's a lot of fun. So that
would lead to a really good tip about role-playing in 4th edition is use skill challenges... learn how to best do them.
Yeah, best do them.
Yeah,
skill
well,
challenges
they,
are could be the worst ruiner of role playing if you don't do
them
right.
If you don't do them right, it can just feel like a forced role.
It just feels like combat, but
if you just run them out of the DMG without any of a lot of suggestions, then
you guys familiar with skill challenges in 4th edition?
I had an interesting experience with them.
Do tell.
Early on, this was just over a year ago, actually. It was. I was using one of Wizards' like module things because I wasn't really sure what to do with skill challenge. I'm like,
All right,
there's this mechanic. I don't know what to do. I'll use one of their example ones. And it was the one. It was the online adventure, like the one where the
Keep on a Shadowfell.
No, it was there was this demon called Naresh and this fallen paladin.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
The story was actually.
I don't know the name.
I thought it was pretty neat. There's a skill challenge in there that pretty much does skill challenges wrong.
Right.
Like, you gather information and make your way to the place where this cult is set up. But if you fail, like, the failure condition, you still make it, you just don't get experience. It literally...
Yeah, that's terrible. Yeah, what I recommend doing, when you see the skill challenge stat block, that should be a guideline. Don't even follow the dang thing. Just use it as an example to tell your story. Look around the table and be like, okay, well, you guys, as an example, say a survival situation. You guys find yourself in a blizzard. What sort of thing, and just pretend I'm talking to you as a group now. What sort of things are you guys going to do to try to thwart off such a blizzard? And instead of being like, okay, I need one of you to roll a endurance check because it's here. Yeah, please do.
I am a big stickler for skill challenges, and I think they can be awesome. And I even use them in other systems. Like, I've used them in Star Wars. I've used them a little bit in World of Darkness games. But you have to do it, like, with very specific things in mind. First off, like, the new errata, fourth, where it's three failures always is the end of it. It's not how many, you know, it's not dependent on the complexity. It's like the way I usually do it, and another thing that I've seen people do with them is they'll just be like, here's kind of like this thing that you're doing. You know, what do you want to roll? I don't agree with that. I like to script it more. And some people are like, well, then if I don't have that skill, it's like that in any game, if you're playing a guy that doesn't have that skill, you're, you know, kind of screwed because you didn't choose to. I mean, you could choose to get more skills, but everybody choose combat stuff. So, like, if you're like, all right, you all are trying to get to the Palace of the Frozen Skulls.
Oh.
And you know,
playing at Syndicon 2010.
And you like specifically describe the situation they're in. Then they'll be like, oh, I could do this and this and this. If you just say, you guys are trying to get to this place, what are you going to do? They're just going to be like, I'm going to walk there. You know, you have to
bring up a good point. Yeah, tell the story.
But don't just have them then, you know, oh, say they need 12 successes or whatever, it's complexity 5. Don't just be like, you have to climb this mountain, now start rolling. Like, have them make one set of rolls, and then when they succeed those, you're like, okay, you passed that, now you're, you know, going across a treacherous ice bridge or something. Like, you know, just
the point is use that as an example of how to, you know, generally it's going to go those stat blocks if you use pre-published adventures. But don't make it feel like, you know, don't be like, everyone roll initiative, we're going to do the skill challenge in order. You want to... That was a pretty good robot right there.
Yeah, never... You know, I would say never run D&D as a robot. Like,
never run D&D as a robot.
You, the monster attacks you. It does more damage.
So, Dave's really good and doing that in... I should say Dave Phillips, because we're being recorded here. He's really good at...
I'm sure the other Dave's good, too.
Dave's pretty
awesome.
Good. Actually, you haven't run for me yet.
Nope.
USOB.
I guess we'll have to do it this time.
We'll have to do it. But what
so
I'm getting at...
You Monument of Ancients for me?
I will.
Okay.
Monument of the Ancients, Dungeon 170.
Yeah.
Available for purchase. I'm kidding. But I hope what you get from the panel on talking about these skill challenges, which a lot of people gripe about, is don't follow it. If it doesn't feel right, if it doesn't feel like you're telling the story correctly...
Or cut it short. Like, if everyone's like... Like, just be like, okay.
And that's about knowing your party. Like, when Dave runs for some of us and we're in optimization mode, then he might be more inclined to go a little lighter on that. But there's campaigns that he runs where we're more into the story. Like, the Brutal Claw Pack one was awesome. God, I lost so many characters in that campaign.
Mostly because you kept just making
I was being stupid. Yeah, and I like making characters. But point being, part of it is knowing what your players want. I mean, it kind of sucks. Like, if you're a story-based DM and you want to present this story, you got to find ways to both satisfy yourself, but also you want to make sure people are having fun because it keeps them engaged. And that's the whole point of this is, you know, anyone can get on a computer. And, hey, I play EverQuest, too. I mean, I'm not bashing MMOs. I'm all for it. But there is something about getting around a table with a group of friends. Like, was I saying in the session yesterday? My wife, it doesn't worry when I go into his house on a Friday night and I'm going to be drinking beer and, you know, hanging out with the guys because, you know, her friends are like, I can't believe you let him go out. It's like, he's not going to a bar. He's playing D&D. But
you're
going to
get imagination.
I know. But we do it. You know, it's funny. I mean, it might as well be a bar because we're all cussing and drinking beer and having fun. But, you know, so... The social aspect of it is fun. Plus, I don't know, I'm a geek. I like playing D&D. I hope you guys do too.
Yeah,
so,
I hate it.
Did you guys want to open it up for some questions maybe? Or not even questions, topics? Or
yeah,
did
well,
you have
just,
anything else?
Like on skill challenges, my biggest piece of advice is actually like make it a narrative. Like when somebody rolls, don't just be like, okay, good. Or
yeah.
What, you know, like give feedback. Like advance the story with every roll if possible. Like keep things moving. And as I said, like, if they're not into it, you know, like, and I'm a stickler for, like, you can't just, like, roll diplomacy. Like, you actually have to say something.
Yeah.
And I think the important, and, you know, people will, like, start saying things, then they'll get to the point and look at me and be like, can I make a diplomacy check yet? And that's fine.
As long as they're role-playing.
As long as they're, like...
You'll find they'll actually get better at it.
Yeah, definitely.
Over time.
The more you're forcing. I always force the warlord whenever he uses any of his inspiring powers to make an inspiring speech, but...
I always ask them what they say, and they usually just go, yeah.
Yeah, we got a couple of friends that are really timid about roles, and that's fine, because, you know, you don't want to,
I would say this edition is best for introverts. Like, I have seen introverts shine in this, and every other system, you know, I've seen them absolutely struggle. But in 4th edition, it's just like,
yeah, because you can focus more on the character instead of more, you know, we shouldn't go into... The point being, 4th edition... allows people more freedom to roleplay. You know, and some people don't want to roleplay. They're legitimately, and there's nothing, I can't tell someone how to play a game. They legitimately look at these character sheets, and they go, I am playing an MMO in person. I don't care about the role-playing. I don't care about anything. My stats are purely to make me awesome in combat. And that's the way it is. But you know what? What kind of a-hole am I to tell that guy how to play the game? You know what I mean? All I can do is present the story and make... Hopefully they enjoy